It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by on-camera and voiceover talent RodHunter.com and the law offices of Matthew Simone. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist Bob Siegel.
It's good to be with you, although a lot of good things are not happening in the news. Some might take exception to that comment because there was a good bill passed, the one that Trump likes to call the Big Beautiful Bill. All kinds of stuff for continuing to build the wall, more ICE agents, no more tax on tips, as Trump promised when he campaigned, no more tax on Social Security. Of course, the Democrats are still trying to claim this is only a tax break for the rich. Yeah. People on Social Security no longer have to pay taxes. People working in restaurants no longer have to pay taxes for their tips. That's just for the rich. How do you know when the Democrat is lying? Their lips are moving. Anyway, it did pass in the House of Representatives, just barely, but it passed. It's also expected to pass in the Senate, not easily, but it is expected to pass there as well. Why is it that I'm claiming this is not great news? Because there's going to be a Democrat lawsuit, right? Oh, you don't think so? Sure they will. They'll call it unconstitutional. After all, unconstitutional now has a new definition. Anything liberals don't like is unconstitutional. They'll say it's oligarchy, not democracy. They'll claim it's racist somehow. Once again, they'll say it's only for the rich. It abolishes due process. You name it. All the popular disseminated buzz phrase talking points. Why not? They're emboldened by activist judges. They're on a roll with Trump's executive orders being overturned one at a time. Why wouldn't they also overturn a law passed by Congress? It's been done before. DOMA was overturned, for example. And just recently, the Senate voted to overturn Biden's EV mandates. California's already planning a lawsuit. Federal judges all over the country think they themselves are the president. Well, I guess that's not fair. They don't think they're the president. They think they're God. In any event, occasionally, once in a blue moon, the Supreme Court does the right thing, interferes with these lower judges. They stop acting spineless and feckless. So even in the face of potential lawsuits, SCOTUS might come through. Maybe. Stranger things have happened. So this can, I suppose, for now, be viewed as good news. Unfortunately, right around the same time this bill passed, we got some bad news. We got some horrible news. Two Jewish people, staff workers at the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C., a man and a woman, a young man and a woman about to be engaged, were gunned down and murdered outside. They were murdered execution style. The guy shot them from behind at close range. When the woman tried to get up, he shot her again. He leaned over and shot them again and again and again. The guy openly admitted his guilt to a Jewish woman shortly afterwards. She didn't know who she was talking to. The police came and arrested him. He shouted, "Free, free Palestine!" I am so sick and tired of that phrase. "Free, free Palestine!" Yeah, that's one of the familiar chants on college campuses these days. Is any of this a surprise? Chants in favor of Hamas, the terrorist group that doesn't recognize Israel's right to exist, have been going on now for almost 2 years. Israel is being accused of genocide, and on the campuses, they're shouting from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. That means there will be no more Israel. That means the Jews will be eliminated. And the Jews on the campuses are also being compared to Nazis. Nazis! The people who tried to exterminate the entire Jewish race and came close to doing so. The Jews are being compared to Nazis. The real Nazi-like genocide took place on October 7th, 2023 by Hamas, when women and men and babies were murdered, decapitated, babies put into ovens. I know I've gone through this with you before, but apparently it can't be done enough. We need to make sure we never forget. And the side of Hamas is being taken on our college campuses with all kinds of vile statements about Jewish people and Israel. So what else did we expect? Sooner or later, some ignoramus psychopath was going to take it upon himself to be a hero. It was only a matter of time. Free, free Palestine! The guy is pure evil. The guy is also a moron. Being evil and a moron, that's a lethal combination. Guy knows absolutely nothing about the history of the Middle East. Palestine. There's never been a country called Palestine. Oh, he must mean the fact that Israel, the nation of Israel, conquered by the Romans in ancient times, was renamed Palestine, a Latinized version of the word Philistine, the old enemies of the Jews. Then most of the Jews were kicked out of their land or enslaved by the Romans or murdered by the Romans. Arabs came into the land as a result of Muslim expansion. Jews returned to the land after being invited by the League of Nations 2,000 years later. Now Jews and Arabs are both living in the land. The United Nations decides to split the land between Jews and Arabs. The Jews agree. The Arabs don't. I know this is review, but it's important review. So the guy's talking about Palestine. There never was a Palestine. Maybe he means Gaza. Well, what was Gaza? Gaza was part of Egypt. And in Egypt, there were some Arab refugees who had been living in the land we now call Israel. But around that time when they rejected the United Nations partition, they decided to join with surrounding Arab armies from Egypt, from Iraq, from Syria, from Jordan. They were going to destroy Israel, wipe Israel off the face of the map. They weren't interested in a two-state solution. They were interested in no more Jews in the land. They joined those armies and or fled their homes. Israel won the war. They became refugees. Now they're living in a refugee camp in Gaza, which is part of Egypt. Flash forward to the year 1967, the Six-Day War, where nine different countries said they were going to take every Jewish man, woman, and child and push them in the sea. Israel did a preemptive strike. And as a result, they took some land. That land included the Gaza Strip, which means those refugees, which are now calling themselves Palestinians as a result of a publicity ploy by Yasser Arafat, publicity ploy and a new title that wasn't even developed until the 1960s. Now they're under Israel's so-called occupation, although Israel took the land just to defend itself. But in 2005, Gaza was turned back over to the, and I'll call them Palestinians just as a conventional reference point, in quotes, Palestinians. The Palestinians repaid Israel. Israel, who put billions of dollars into hospitals and greenhouses, they repaid them by burning down every Jewish synagogue, by firing missiles into the land, by electing the terrorist organization Hamas, and then that takes us up to the October attack in 2023. Meanwhile, back to this guy that did the shooting. The woman that I mentioned earlier who talked to him before she knew who he was, before the police came and arrested him. This woman was herself Jewish, a Jewish lesbian, self-described. She has been kicked out of LGBTQ bars for being Jewish. And yet in Gaza, gay people are often executed. The contradiction is glaring, but partially explained. Talking points about Israel have sold the idea that Jews are white. Now, I've been to Israel. I'm Jewish myself. Many Israelis are just as dark as the Arabs that live in the land. Doesn't matter. They've been described as white, and oh, the minute you do that, we're feeding into the incredibly stupid narrative that white people can never be victims and people of color can never be racist. So if the Arab Palestinians are darker, they are the victims. If the Israelis are lighter, they're the perpetrators. See how it works? That's why Trump is getting criticism for allowing immigrants from South Africa. The immigrants are white. And Trump goes out of the way to mention that they're being persecuted because they're white. You're not allowed to do that, President Trump. How can a white person anywhere be a victim? How can they be persecuted? He's now being accused of racism for allowing white immigrants claiming asylum, but not Hispanics or others. That is simply not true. Illegal immigration is the only thing Trump works against. We, as a country, have legitimately allowed legal asylum seekers into our country for years, including years under the Trump administration. But recently, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa met with Trump in the Oval Office. And as he's often done recently, this Oval Office meeting was put on TV. Trump showed him videos of calls for death and violence against white citizens in South Africa. He talked about their farms being taken away. He talked about their land being taken away. He asked the South African president why people promoting violence publicly aren't being arrested. The mainstream media, of course, took the side of President Ramaphosa, who also, by the way, calls Israel a genocide nation on top of everything else. But his own actions are given a free pass. After all, how can black people be guilty of their own apartheid, guilty of their own segregation? How can white people possibly be innocent? You see, our media was simply unable to wrap its head around this. But for those who try, the word reparations comes up. My friends, we need to pay careful attention to this. It's true that in the past, there was apartheid in South Africa. It was wrong, it was cruel, it was evil. It is no longer going on. But now that white people are out of power, something very akin to reparations is taking place. Children are being punished for the crimes of their ancestors. Unfortunately, many are calling for the very same thing to go on in the United States, reparations, or at least very similar. We aren't yet hearing calls about violence against white people, but there's been a lot of talk about land redistribution, and where there's smoke, there will always be fire. Just as unfortunate, my fellow Christians sometimes allow their guilt buttons to be pushed, and they allow this false narrative, which is also a false theology. You see, as Christians, we teach that we're guilty of sin. Well, I am guilty of many sins, but I have enough real sins that I'm not going to take on some sin that I didn't really commit. But Christians, like I said, can be made to feel guilty very easily. They've accepted, many of them, reparations. They've accepted it even as an idea that's taught in the Bible, but it's not really taught in the Bible. So they've accepted a false theology. Allow me then to take a few minutes to review what the Bible says about race and reparations. The Bible actually says a lot about it, and it does not match today's woke narrative. We have sadly come to expect brainwashing from the media. We have sadly come to expect brainwashing from our college campuses. How tragic that brainwashing is also now going on in the church amongst God's people who claim to be representing the love of God and offering forgiveness for all human beings, who are claiming that all human beings together are guilty of sin. Let's review what the Bible says about this. Are we responsible for the sins of our ancestors? While discussions about reparations can be complex and far more about our country's history rather than the Bible, nevertheless, we as Christians have biblical truth to stand on regarding what the Bible says about racism and generational guilt. Not only does the Bible condemn both slavery and racism, it also speaks about who is or is not responsible for events of the past. Taking these matters in sequence, the New Testament Bible condemns slavery in three different places. 1 Timothy chapter 1, Paul makes it clear that slave trading is an evil practice. Now, while he did not encourage a violent revolution, he wanted Christianity to be a peaceful revolution, he was aware of the legal emancipation procedures in ancient Rome and strongly encouraged them. 1 Corinthians chapter 7, Paul speaking to the church, he says, "Were you a slave when you were called? Don't let it trouble you, although if you can gain your freedom, do so." But perhaps Paul's most liberating text is found in Galatians chapter 3, where he said that the church would not stand for racial division or class division. He says, "There is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female." Those were the three chief divisions in those days. Men were viewed as superior to women. Jews viewed themselves as superior to Greeks. I said on a previous program that although Jews are the victims of a lot of racism today, in New Testament times, they, and I'm saying this about my own ancestors, they tended to be kind of haughty. Paul is saying that within the walls of the church, we do not recognize a difference between masters or slaves. You are all part of the heritage of Christ now. Racial division is also being challenged here by Paul. Inasmuch as in those days no love was lost between Jews and Gentiles, there was even more shunning at that time of the Samaritans, viewed as half-breed Israelites by the Jews. In John chapter 4, we see Jesus talking openly to a Samaritan woman. To be talking to a woman openly, and particularly a Samaritan woman, that shows you the boundaries that Jesus was willing to break down and challenge. But whereas the Bible condemns slavery and racism, that does not immediately translate into an acceptance of reparations. The issue of reparations in America is complicated. Some argue that many thousands upon thousands of deaths in the North and South during the Civil War already brought about great wrath and reparation upon the country. Others point to decades of affirmative action as a type of reparation. Further nuance acknowledges a wide diversity of American immigrants over the years. A lot of Americans weren't around before the Civil War. My own grandfathers came here at the top of the 20th century, escaping racism perpetrated against them, the Jewish pogroms of Russia. Obviously, America's unique situation is not mentioned specifically in the Bible, but two important principles will at least shed light on part of the discussion. First, people are not responsible for their ancestors' sins. Deuteronomy chapter 24, "Fathers shall not be put to death for their children, nor children for their fathers. Only for his own guilt shall a man be put to death." While the subject here, of course, is capital punishment, the spirit of the sentiment is nevertheless clear. In Ezekiel's day, this remained a familiar teaching. Ezekiel chapter 18. "You ask, why does the son not share the guilt of the father? Since the son has done what is just and right and has been careful to keep my decrees, he will surely live. The soul who sins is the one who will die. The son will not share the guilt of the father, nor will the father share the guilt of the son. The righteousness of the righteous man will be credited to him, and the wickedness of the wicked will be charged against them." However, there's another problem with reparations, and this also goes back to the Bible. And ironically, this also goes back to our joint heritage as human beings. Human nature is flawed and sinful. That's true of all of us. Whatever our color, we're flawed, we're sinful, we are all in this together, we are all in need of forgiveness, we are all in need of redemption. Romans chapter 3 and Romans chapter 6, and frankly, the entire book of Romans goes into that in great detail. But let me talk about one particular sinful flaw. There's a whole litany of sins that we're all guilty of, but one particular sinful flaw demonstrates time and again that in the face of new power, no amount of power is ever enough. This means that to those who wish to enact change, no amount of change will ever suffice. Ecclesiastes chapter 5 says, "Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income." Keeping all of these biblical truths in mind and bringing things into the early 21st century, we are left with several questions regarding the matter of reparations. And here's the problem, my friends. Nobody answers these questions consistently. Nobody answers these questions in any way that makes sense. Seldom do any two people give you the same answer to these questions. Here are my questions. I'm sure people have others. Here are my questions about reparations. Simple, obvious questions that anybody is probably thinking of. First, what exactly will be enough? When will we be square? Moving on, what will the day look like when no more talk about reparations is needed? Yes, slavery was a horrible stain on our country, but when will we be able to say we've moved on? The past was terrible, but the present is better, and the future looks good. Slavery has been abolished. Segregation is against the law. Discrimination is against the law. How exactly would reparations be implemented? Who exactly will make the decision regarding who owes whom what and what exactly is owed? What financial figure will be enough? Name an amount. I've heard everything from activists on talking head TV shows calling for land redistribution to out-of-control mobs demanding that white people give up their hard-earned homes simply because they are white. How exactly will this be settled? I'm not asking for emotional knee-jerk reactions. I'm asking real questions. How will we determine who receives what? Will it have to be proven that a particular white person had ancestors who were slave owners? Will instead all white people have to give things up simply because they're white, and supposedly nothing they ever did that led to prosperity was truly accomplished without it having somehow been built on the backs of our slavery institution that's some 200 years old now, or almost 200 years old now? Will middle-income families be taxed so that money can go to all African-American families, even the prosperous ones? Football stars? Movie stars? Presidents? I love Will Smith as an actor. I'm not sure he needs any extra money. Where will it stop? And what other people groups will be next? You know this will open Pandora's box. There's already an entire organization called La Raza, which believes California, Texas, and other states should be given back to Mexico. Here's one. Try this on for size. My Jewish ancestors were slaves of the Egyptians. Egypt is on the continent of Africa. Do African Americans owe me reparations? Of course not. That's nonsense, right? Yes, it is nonsense. All of it is nonsense. Larry Elder said it best. A great radio talk show host, an African American radio talk show host, a conservative radio talk show host. Let me share with you Larry Elder's definition of reparations. He says, reparations, money from people who never owned slaves, paid to people who never were slaves. This is Bob Siegel, making the obvious obvious with some help from Larry Elder, who made the obvious even more obvious.
You only need to listen to this radio program once to figure out that Bob has very strong opinions on a wide variety of issues. But one of Bob's strongest passions is freedom of speech itself, even when such speech challenges his own convictions. So feel free to send Bob a comment or a thought-provoking question. You can reach Bob on Facebook or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-age child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool. We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Well, it's graduation time, and who could possibly have a more fun, festive graduation than Columbia University? Yeah, where brave students who stand up for worthy causes, like the murderous cutthroats of Hamas, decided as an act of protest to burn their diplomas.
What sacrifice! These kids are really putting it all on the line, taking risks. Of course, you realize a diploma can always be reprinted. And even if it isn't, it still remains on record that the student graduated. It can still show up on his resume, unless the school decides to officially revoke their graduation. But the odds of that kind of discipline from this Lex Luthor institution are about as good as Eric Swalwell kicking Chinese spies out of the bedroom. Make no mistake, my friends, these students have sacrificed nothing. Say hello again to my producer, Brendan Thomas.
Well, about the diploma part, what's amazing where technology can do these days. I mean, printing up the old diploma, putting the old PDF file together. It's pretty simple, honestly.
It was a meaningless act. It was just a way of showing off.
Yeah, and now the Trump administration is suing the Columbia University for civil rights. Is that correct?
I believe they're involved in I know they're dealing with Harvard, and they said Columbia was next on the list. They may have gotten to Columbia already.
I
know that they revoked Harvard's ability to give out any foreign visas, but of course, a court just overturned that, as always.
According to this, it says that the government investigation found that Columbia violated student civil rights, and so thus they're going to form a kind of punishment based on that. And besides, right now, it's Claire Shipman as the president of the university, but keep in mind, she's just the acting president, so she's a great actress. Let me tell you, I'm on the edge of my seat with her acting, but it's very sad to see.
They'll give these platitudes about being against anti-Semitism, but at the end of the day, they're not really doing anything.
Right, and again, this is so disappointing to see these from Ivy League universities. These are the top tier of what America offers.
Not that the state universities are always much better, but the Ivy League is known for special prestige, and it's just a cesspool going on.
Yeah,
there.
It's very disappointing. So today, I have a couple of news stories to go through, and then we'll get in our last segment about why this weekend is so important in military history. But first, let's get into some news stories. First, let's go all the way out to Ohio. There is a bill that's about to be passed soon where this bill would ban certain people from buying land. Anyone who is not a U.S. citizen and from a country that is a foreign adversary from buying land within 25 miles of protected property is what the quote is. Protected property. So one person
that would be like military installations, things like that. Because I know Chinese have been buying up land like gangbusters.
Right. And this one, they interviewed a person named Jin Huan in this news story. They've been in the States for 14 years, and she got her green card after 10 years of living in America. She said, quote, under this bill, I could lose my home where I'm here legally, and I would be labeled as a foreign adversary.
Well, you mean they're going to make it retroactive to somebody who already bought land?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah, I'm not sure how I feel about that, but I do appreciate the spirit of the law. Something's got to be done, because China's just buying up our land and buying up our businesses.
Especially here in California, there was a recent news story. I remember they had a warehouse and they were creating more of the COVID situations, another strand of it to make it more devious and more hurtful to our society. But luckily, we were able to find that warehouse and quickly take care of that. And I want to say it was under the Trump administration too when that situation happened, because it was late into its presidency. But I can't remember off the top of my head. Nevertheless, under the Ohio law, the list of land that would fall under protected property includes, as you said, military bases, but specifically, they also include railroad property, a dam operating by state or federal governments, trucking terminals, airports, and farmlands, specifically. That's what they specify in that. So I'm glad they specify the rule, because otherwise, I have a feeling that if it was just saying protected property, here we go again, government being very loose on their terms, and they'll say, oh, well, this is a protected property, and this is...
Well, again, I think the courts are going to try to overturn this either way.
Yeah.
But we've got to still fight this fight.
And it's not an official law yet, I know, because it's still going through the state Senate in Ohio, and it's going to go to the House of Representatives in that state as well. So we'll wait and see if it even gets passed too in the first place, because I'm not sure how Ohio's lawmakers are. Are they more conservative?
They're more conservative in Ohio. They've gone back and forth, but lately they're more conservative.
Right,
that's
and being next to Pennsylvania with everything being on Pennsylvania. Let me tell you, it's very interesting to see how all the laws are going to go down this year in those particular states. Nevertheless, Governor Mike DeWine said there might be some countries that you might be a little worried having nationals from that country owning property in the United States, particularly real estate in the state of Ohio. So we'll see. According to him, he says the list of foreign advisories to the United States is not set in stone, but right now it's China, Russia, Iran, North Korea, Cuba, Venezuela, and Syria. Under this proposal,
yeah, can't imagine why we wouldn't want all of them to start buying up our land.
Yeah, under this proposal, the Ohio Secretary of State would have to update the list every 6 months. So just a heads up on that part. For me personally, again, I completely understand. But keep in mind, too, this is basically those countries giving us extra money, too, at the same time. So
it is a problem when we're beholden to evil nations.
Exactly. Like that. Yeah. And again, there's always a cause and effect when it comes to certain laws.
Yeah, I'm nervous about Qatar and Saudi Arabia, too. They are evil countries. I understand what Trump's trying to do, like I said last week. I understand he wants to make deals, and that's fine, but we need to be really careful.
I agree. So we'll keep an eye on this bill and see where this goes. Next up, let's talk about California and San Diego. Some more studies have been passed just recently on this stuff.
Looking forward to this.
Yeah. We'll start with this one. Heal the Bay is a nonprofit organization here to help out with certain things that are going on at beaches. And this time around, they did a study to show what is the dirtiest beaches in California. Not surprised. A lot of the ones are near the border of
Mexico.
Imperial Beach is ranked number, I want to say it was 5 on this.
It's getting into Coronado too.
Yeah, number 5. They said they included Playa Blanca, which is technically a part of Baja California. It's really on the border there, but that's the number 1. Santa Monica Pier is number 2. And they also included Tijuana Slough, which is technically in the San Diego side, as number 3.
Is this mostly sewage coming from Mexico, or are there other factors?
They are saying it's from Mexico specifically. So, but
now, how would it bypass stuff in between San Diego and Santa Monica?
Because it's literally on that borderline, so they are considering that borderline part of the U.S. territory area. As soon as you get onto that other side, then it's definitely Mexico. But not to be pun intended, I guess, but wishy-washy situation with a beach, yeah. Nevertheless, they do note that 12 beaches in San Diego County have improved their beach health, but it can definitely be a lot better because there are certain beaches out there that are doing really, really poorly, especially the ones I just listed out. They also mentioned Borderfield State Park as being another really bad area for dirtiest beach in California. So we're not doing good there, but maybe some other factors we might be doing a little bit better. Consumer Affairs did a study to see which states are treating renters very, very nicely in this area. Oh, surprise, surprise, California's the worst. This showed that there was a combination of high or rapidly increasing rents along with low rental availability and poor quality of life metrics. That's how they did the study. The study also notes there's not one positive attribute to living in California as a renter. That is very, not even one nitpick thing saying like, oh, you know, the renters laws are pretty protective for renters or something like that. No, not a single gosh darn thing. So thanks a lot for that study. Very quickly, if you were wondering, we are at a 34.74 points out of 100. Second place is 37.25. That is a 3-point difference. That is a huge gap, in my opinion. That would be Nevada that has that one. Other states include Florida, Louisiana, Massachusetts as the worst states for renters. However, the best states include Wisconsin, Minnesota, Wyoming, Iowa, and North Dakota being the huge, huge leader at 67.15 out of 100 points.
These are mixtures of red and blue, which surprises me.
Yeah, for sure. But they do note that North Dakota has very wide range of rental availability. And of course, the affordability of these rentals are fantastic. I was looking into North Dakota myself about last year or so because I was very close to moving there. I was only going to pay a $700 rent for our 2-bedroom, 2-bathroom apartment that was at least double the size of a California apartment. So I was really looking
forward to it. We pay double here for everything.
It's true.
Gas, food, rent, everything.
I should have saw that one coming, actually. Yeah, you're right. So, again, not another great report. Maybe this one will help us here. How about being the most affordable housing, according to Wallop Hub, examined 300 cities in the U.S. to determine which is the most affordable housing for all of America. And guess what? California cities, 25 are in the bottom 30. 25 cities of California are in the worst, most unaffordable cities to live in all of America. That is so disappointing.
Where is San Diego?
San Diego is actually ranked number 29, that low. But number 1 and number 2 are Santa Barbara and Santa Monica. We have Berkeley at number 3. Costa Mesa at number 4 and Irvine at number 5. Again, it's very disappointing to see. Los Angeles is number 7 too, by the way. You don't get until number 10, which is New York, finally, that gets into a city that's away from California. But everything here is just California, California. According to them, they scored a 22.63 out of 100 points for affordability. According to data from Zillow, if you're looking to buy a home and just put 10% down for that home, you will need to make at least $297,417. On top of that, your monthly home payment is going to be $7,435 too in today's market. San Francisco, you're going to need $360,000 to put a 10% down on your home. And San Jose is going to be roughly around $510,000. So it is ridiculous how much money you're going to have to try to pay down in order to get a house in one of those areas. But that's just where the economy is now. And unfortunately, unless we actually start making a change in this area, it's just going to continue to skyrocket. And I honestly have to blame Gavin Newsom for how high everything's going to cost and how the interest rates are in this particular state. He can blame Trump all he wants. He can. But unfortunately, we all know what the truth is. And we all know where this is probably going to lead to, unfortunately. But until people actually open their eyes, open their ears, and notice these data points, I'll keep reading them each and every week if I need to, but it's very, very disappointing.
You'd think those fires would have awakened everybody, but it sounds like that hasn't exactly happened. It's happened with some, but not nearly enough.
It's true. All right, well, we're going to take a quick commercial break. Up next, we're going to discuss what the real meaning of this weekend has to be, especially with Monday coming up here.
Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480539. W&S Electric.
Is it really true that there will be peace in the Middle East if we just have a two-state solution? Or are some people instead challenging Israel's right to exist at all? Is it true that Jews have no historical claim to the Holy Land and stole that land from a people called the Palestinians? Bob Siegel's latest book challenges the historical revision of the Israeli-Palestinian situation and shows how Israel's struggle may soon be the struggle of the entire world. The Holocaust Against Israel by Bob Siegel, available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
I'm Dr. David Poole, president of San Diego Christian College. If you've been thinking about getting your pilot's license and a degree in aviation, come fly with us. We have a long history of producing aviation leaders. Whether your focus is on commercial, missionary, or military, we're ready to help you achieve your goals from a Christian worldview. So look us up at sdcc.edu. That's sdcc.edu. San Diego Christian College. Come fly with us.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to 1170 AM, 96.1 FM, The Answer. I'm your host, Bob Siegel. Say hello again to Brendan Thomas.
Well, we are in a very, very important time right now in our year. As most people might have, they have a three-day weekend, as you know. But tomorrow, which is Monday, May 26th, it's a very, very important holiday for a lot of things. But it is specifically Memorial Day. So originally, it was known as Decoration Day. Many people like to view this as, oh, I get a day off of work, or, oh, I get some cool sales. But that's not what the real reason behind Memorial Day should be.
It's a time of commemoration.
It absolutely is. This is a day about honoring and mourning the U.S. military personnel who died while serving the United States Armed Forces. So I wanted to discuss a little bit of the history of Memorial Day. It's actually quite interesting if you go deep into a deep dive of it. So the first national observance of Memorial Day actually occurred May 30th, 1868. The holiday was proclaimed by Commander-in-Chief John A. Logan of the Grand Army of the Republic to honor the Union soldiers who had died in the American Civil War. National Cemetery Administration, a division of the Department of Veterans Affairs, credits Mary Ann Williams with originating the idea of strewing the graves of Civil War soldiers, Union and Confederate, with flowers. Official recognition as a holiday spread among states, beginning with New York in 1873, and by 1890, every Union state had adopted it. The World Wars turned the day into remembering all members of the U.S. military who fought and died in service. So prior to the World Wars, it was just focusing on the soldiers in the Civil War specifically. So that was quite interesting. I thought it was just always about every single soldier, even in the Revolutionary War. So in 1968, Congress changed its observance to the last Monday in May. And in 1971, the U.S. Congress standardized the name of Memorial Day instead of Decoration Day. So, which I think is a little bit more of a behooving name. I prefer memorizing these particular people who lost their lives and fought for where our country is today. I like that day better than Decoration Day personally, but that's just me. So a variety of cities and people have claimed the origination of Memorial Day. On June 3rd, 1861, Warrenton, Virginia was the location of the first Civil War soldier's grave to be decorated, according to an article in the Richmond Times-Dispatch in 1906.
Were they decorating a Confederate or a Union? Because this was Virginia.
It doesn't say. I'm assuming it's a Confederate person, but I could be wrong. This decoration was for the funeral of the first soldier killed during the Civil War, John Quincy Marr, who died on June 1st, 1861, during a skirmish at the Battle of Fairfax Courthouse in Virginia. Another one that they're suggesting, too, is on May 1st, 1865, May Day, in Charleston, South Carolina. The recently freed black population held a parade of 10,000 people to honor 257 dead Union soldiers. The soldiers had been buried in a mass grave at the Washington Race Course, having died at the Confederate prison camp located there. After the city and camp fell, the freed black population unearthed and properly buried the soldiers, placing flowers at their graves. The event was reported in the Charleston Daily Courier and the New York Tribune at that time.
That is fascinating. I have never heard that before.
Historian David Blight has also called this commemoration the very first Memorial Day, but keep in mind that 1861 is just one soldier. This one was a whole troop of soldiers. I do not think this is the one where they did a movie based on that troop specifically.
You're talking about the movie Glory?
Yes. I don't believe it's
wonderful
the same
movie.
Troop.
No, this was a group of black soldiers who fought in the war.
Yeah. Those soldiers, those soldiers did fight in the war, but they were from Jersey, I believe, right?
They were a regiment from the North, but they were black, from the free states in the North. Mm-hmm. And you're talking here about black people freed and something they did after the Civil War.
Exactly. Okay, gotcha.
That was
okay.
A wonderful movie, by the way.
Fantastic
movie. Denzel Washington.
Yeah, and it's Morgan one of the Freeman very few movies where I'm not annoyed of Matthew Broderick. It's actually very impressive.
Oh,
actually.
I like him. Didn't you like Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
No, again, one of the very few. So that's one of the few. But
it was a very different kind of acting. It showcased his versatility the way he was in Glory.
I can't stand Inspector Gadget. I can't stand what's another silly movie he was in? Deck the Halls. I didn't like him in because he was...
That whole movie and I like Danny DeVito as an actor, but there was nothing in the chemistry of that movie.
Well,
I also
like his style of comedy too, the dark kind of style comedy. There's great examples, but Deck the
Halls, I didn't like
is
the cable guy either, because Matthew Broderick's life was just being systematically destroyed by Jim Carrey. I just don't find that funny.
Well, I don't mind it only for the fact that Jim Carrey played it over the top. Matthew Broderick played it in a
he was kind of a stuffed shirt, which was different than his previous role.
I get why, because you need a straight man for basically Jim Carrey style comedy out there. But
you don't usually like to see somebody who's normally funny as a straight man. Although, again, it showcases his versatility.
I guess.
Still, I didn't care for the cable guy.
And again, I don't like the producers too much. I don't think he was very good in that
one. I thought that was a okay as a musical. I loved the original version so much,
with Gene Wilder.
Yes, I think my nod is to go to the original Mel Brooks version.
Of course, of course. Going back to our topic here of Memorial Day.
I know. Got off the seriousness of Memorial Day, didn't we?
Yeah. So originally, the date of April 26th was chosen as the date for a Memorial Day, which corresponded with the end date of the war with the surrender agreement between Generals Johnston and Sherman in 1865. After General Logan's General Order No. 11 to the Grand Army of the Republic to observe May 30th, 1868, the earlier version of the holiday began to be referred to as Confederate Memorial Day. According to the United States Library of Congress, Southern women decorated the graves of soldiers even before the Civil War's end. Records show that by 1865, Mississippi, Virginia, and South Carolina all had presidents for Memorial Day. The earliest Southern Memorial Day celebrations were simple, somber occasions for veterans and their families to honor the dead and to tend to local cemeteries. In following years, the Ladies Memorial Association and other groups increasingly focused rituals on preserving Confederate culture and the lost cause of the Confederacy narrative. The 1863 cemetery dedication at Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, included a ceremony of commemoration at the graves of dead soldiers. Some have therefore claimed that President Abraham Lincoln was the founder of Memorial Day specifically. Chicago journalist Lloyd Lewis, who was very, very much a critic of Abraham Lincoln at the time, tried to make the case that it was Lincoln's funeral that spurred the soldiers' grave decorating that followed instead, not specifically him during his presidency. But nevertheless, it is a very, very big occasion, and Gettysburg was definitely a big address during that time to help commemorate those that lost the lives in that horrible, horrible battle too. So there's so many different examples. Going back very quickly too to Marianne Williams, one other interesting fact I would say is that she actually also included a baked good on top of every cemetery of a person that lost. So she had to bake over thousands and thousands of different pastries for them. And she wrote individual letters to each soldier as well.
She did baked goods on behalf of the dead soldiers,
yes.
And then other people ate them, or did they just leave the baked goods?
She would leave the baked goods there.
Wow.
And not only that, but again, she would also write individual letters, personal letters to each and every soldier.
That is something.
That is amazing. That woman is truly, truly amazing. That's why they started the movement, the Ladies Memorial Association. She was the leader of that.
This is good to remember these earlier traditions, because people just view it today as a day to have a barbecue.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, but there's a real seriousness to it. My wife and I are going to go over to Mount Soledad tomorrow to help commemorate those who have lost lives there too. They have one every single year. It's huge. It's a beautiful.
And that cross was built as a war memorial originally.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's such a beautiful area too to be
from
around.
Mount Soledad, you can see everything in San Diego. You can see both bays together, Mission Bay and San Diego Bay. I love that view from
exactly.
Mount Soledad.
And it really commemorates, again, America's finest city for that matter too.
Yes.
But again, the fact that that memorial there, and I'm surprised there was so much when they were trying to build it, there was a lot of pushback on that. It's in memory of soldiers that have lost and fought
for our
battles.
There's a lot of
too.
Pushback since building it, because it's a cross and separation between church and state. There have been all kinds of legal jumblings.
It's ridiculous. Again, the main point of this whole thing is to focus on those who fought for our country, and look at where our country is now. It is truly an amazing country to be in. You don't have any of these freedoms or rights in any other country.
Yeah, and we owe these martyrs for our cause everything, absolutely everything.
Exactly, yeah. We wouldn't be here. We wouldn't be in the country that we're in. We wouldn't have the rights that we have without those
people. Yeah, and that applies to the original colonial soldiers, Revolutionary War, all the way through present day, people that are fighting overseas for us right now.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Well, Bob, thank you again so much for your time tonight. I really,
Brendan,
really
always a pleasure
it.
And I appreciate the very interesting history that we got into.
Absolutely. In celebration of those who've passed their lives, we will now finish tonight's broadcast with a playing of Taps.
Thank you.
The Bob Siegel Show is sponsored in part by the Law Offices of Matthew Simone,